Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to another one of those things that I don't quite understand, but I do. A podcast. And it's Ivan and James Martin, it says here, doing it. And our guest this week is the one and only Paddy Jenkins. He and James, of course, starred and won Oscars for An Irish Goodbye. So it's a happy reunion here. A lot has happened since then and continues to happen. Paddy, everybody must have noticed by now your boot. Yes. So let's get that put to bed. What's the story?
Well, I was up with my daughters, doing a wee bit of decorating work, and everything's going according to plan. And I was walking down the stairs, and unbeknownst to me, I should have probably looked, in fairness. But let this be a lesson to everybody. Don't have anything on the stairs. She had a shoebox belonging to my granddaughter sitting there. So my right leg hit the shoebox. It started the cartwheel. My right leg went up in the air and my entire body weight fell on my left lower leg, which had nowhere to go. And I remember the pain being excruciating at the time. And I thought to myself, you know, I've had bumps before. If this pain goes away in 10 or 12 seconds, I'm all right. And of course it didn't. And I pulled the foot out from underneath me and it started to swing of its own accord.
Oh dear.
And just as that, my daughter walked in the door and she said, "What's wrong?" At this stage, I was the colour of the jumper I'm wearing. I says, I've broke my leg. I know I've broke my leg. And I think I fainted for a couple of seconds, and then it was funny. We'll say we'll go across the road because I knew a guy across the road. We'll get him to help us into the car and stuff. But she went over across the road to see Jared, and Jared had his double bed in the living room because he'd fell off a cherry picker and broke his hip and his leg and had a lie in the open waste ground that he was working in for 4.5 hours waiting on an ambulance. So right there and then I thought, you know, things could be worse, you know. Phoned Tim McGarry immediately because we were in supposedly Oma that night. Even before I rang my wife, Geraldine, I said, "Tim, I'm in trouble." And I was still screeching with the pain. I remember Tim said, "Are you all right?" Like, "No, I'm not all right. I broke my leg." Yeah. "But I need to let you know, because you need to know ASAP." And then the rest is the usual, you know, hospital down, x-ray, blah, blah, you know, plaster cast, stay in, fix it, diddle it out. Kingsbridge on the Friday. Michael McMullen done an absolute wizardry job on my ankle. That was tough that sort of week. And then went down to the hospital for them to have a look at it. They were surprised at how well it was going and they put me on a boot. In fairness, only 2 weeks after it had happened. And then I was down in the hospital yesterday and they said, you're all right. It looks fabulous. You can take the dressing off in 4 or 5 days and just continue using the boot as you need. But like, when you consider it was only 3 weeks ago and...
Yeah, you're bouncing, literally.
I'm hopping about nicely.
Yeah, I take it your daughter hasn't had the temerity to say, when are you going to finish this job?
It's funny because it's, my friend and yours, John Lenehan, said, you know, you can imagine what's going on. He comes over and he says hello and we get out. Or no, he came to the house actually. Him and Big Ivan and Chief are fair play to them all. And he says, right, what about Nicole? Does she has she understood really what she's done really? I says, she feels pretty bad about it. When can I see her? I says, well, if you wait long enough, you know,
yeah,
she'll probably be here. And right enough, she did come, and he ripped her a new one. as only our John can.
Yes, as only John can, indeed. So it's, I suppose you could say, the continuing curse of the Give 'Em a Headpiece live show.
You've heard?
What?
What do you mean, the continuing curse?
Well, last year, you couldn't go to the Oscars.
Well, oh yes, right.
Because you had to be in Strabane and Downpatrick.
Yes, that's right.
So you missed the red carpet.
I did.
And to be fair to you, you said to me at the time, I signed to do this, so there it is.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So then this year, the show is up and running.
Yeah.
Pastor Begbie is in full flight. And then his dear friend, Paddy Jenkins, falls down the stairs and breaks his leg. Yeah. So the jinx continues. There a further jinx that I don't know about?
That's what I thought you were alluding to. Because I was talking to Marty McGuire.
Yes.
Who was drafted in.
Yes.
At very little notice, and fair play, Marty. So he's playing, I'm not too sure whether he's my younger brother or older brother.
Right.
But he's the Reverend Bobby Begbie.
Yes.
And I was talking to him just the other day, and he has a detached retina.
No way.
Yep. So the doctor said, the curse of the Begbies.
Yeah.
I know. So I was talking to him, and the doctor said to Marty, you know, because Marty said to me, I've got this lava lamp thing going on. It's like, you know, you can imagine a, you know, anything going on. So he went anyway and sent him to the eye thing. Said, Marty, Martin, you look as if you're having a very early stage of detached retina. I would advise you to put a patch on, lie back until we can get you into surgery or whatever they need to do. And Marty says, can't, I'm on stage. And the surgeon says, well, I would very much advise you not to go on stage. So there was like,
They're in the opera house as well.
They're in the opera house.
Yeah.
So he had to tell the surgeon why he was on stage, because there's no one else available. So anyway, look, he said, basically what I'm doing is standing on stage and talking for 2 hours. There's no rough and tumble. There's no anything other than standing on stage and talking. There's no, you know, sudden movements or anything.
No.
And so the surgeon said, look, that's okay. I'd still advise you not to do it. But if needs be,
It's time limited as well.
It is. It's finished on. But then talking of that, they're supposed to finish on the Saturday. The boys being the boys, they are going to go and honour the Oma one that they had to pull.
Yeah.
Because of, you know, exactly, it's just a head rack to try and put that something together on that night.
Yeah.
But, so anyway.
There we are.
There we are.
Gracious, you know Marty James, don't you?
I do, yeah. I actually worked with his wife, actually, and
Joe, yeah.
He is in the Ups and Downs. yeah. actually, and fantastic actor. She knows her stuff. But it's nice to know her and Marty at the same level.
Yeah.
But I'm sure it was a really nice just to walk with her, I take it.
Oh, she was lovely. She was lovely. As is Marty. You know, we go back a long time. To school, actually.
Yeah, at LaSalle.
Right back to LaSalle, and two of us were in the same year. We joined in 1976.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, was Sean there at that time?
Oh, Doc? Sean Doherty?
No, Sean Crummy. He was
Sean
teaching.
No, Sean didn't start until I left.
Right.
I think Sean started in the mid-80s, maybe 83, 84, something like that.
Yeah.
Marty may have, because Marty continued, upper lower sixth and upper sixth.
Yeah.
I think Marty continued, and then so he may have came across Sean. I didn't know Sean until much later when we did a show together with Lenehan. Much later. Poor Sean as well.
Yeah, I know. Sean, well, of course, I did Folks on the Hill with Sean.
Yep.
And, you know, he's a great loss.
Yes.
You know, he massive, is. Even after all this time. Yep. But that early stuff, that was where you started at school, was it? Doing plays and bits of shows, as they called them in those days.
Yeah. Well, my mum and dad used to take us to Bray, down in County Wicklow, just out about 10 miles the other side of Dublin. And there was a wee hotel sat at the bottom of, the big hill with a cross on the top of it?
Yes, Sugarloaf.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there was a wee hotel used to sit at the bottom of it. And mum and dad used to take us on a Sunday afternoon, and we had our dinner or whatever, and there was a wee band playing, and mum and dad, I used to know this song. I can't remember the guy's second name. He was a kid. Mother of Mine, do you remember that song?
Neil Reid.
Yeah. Very kid. So
I didn't know that.
So mum and dad used to get me to get up and sing this song, and one of the band members said, Your kid has timing, a nice thing of timing. So anyway, that was that. And then we did something in Holy Child School before I went to LaSalle, and it was something based around the $6 million man. I can't remember what it was called, the kid from Andy Town or something like that. Yeah. They had these special powers. So that was that. And then it was part of St. Agnes's Youth Club.
Yes. And I was just thinking, there was a lot of talk at that time about special powers.
I'll tell you another story about who I'm going to see about this, special powers later on. Something to do with a fracture, but I'll leave that there a wee bit later. So I was part of St. Agnes's Youth Club. And there was a man there by the name of Brian Drain.
Right.
Who went on to found the Rainbow Factory.
Right, right.
But as I say, so him and I, a wee guy called Titch Toner,
right,
who then went on to be part of Energy Orchard along with Bap.
Yeah.
And Brezzy. And then there was another kid called Marty Kane and another girl called Leontia Kennedy. And we were known. And I remember Brian Drain having it on his wee Honda Civic, his wee maroon Honda Civic. We were known as Marty and the Mime Kids.
Yes.
Right. So Marty sang.
Right.
I mimed to Gary Glitter and Roy Orbison.
Right.
Tits mimed to Elvis Presley and somebody else, but I can't remember. And Leontia Kennedy mimed to Shirley Bassey and...
Hey, big spender. Yep.
And My Boy Lollipop.
Oh, Millie.
Millie.
Yeah.
So we went around all places in Belfast with this wee troop. We all got geared up, and we were only, 11 years old. So Brian thought it'd be good. What's you need to have? To go and watch somebody good, you know.
It would help you.
It would help to
sort of build up good grounding for you.
So he took us to see Roy Orbison.
Oh, yes. Brilliant.
In 1974 in the ABC cinema.
Yes.
Research was the word I was looking for. Right, I thought it would be great research.
Research, yes.
We were just sitting in the ABC cinema with this legend.
Yes.
You know, and I was looking at, you know, 30 and 40 year old women pulling their hair out and screaming. When he sang
Pretty Woman
and In Dreams and
It's all those things.
And we were just in awe, but there was Roy Orbison.
I'm sure that's a great memory.
Oh, it's fantastic, you know. Roy Orbison, like I'm a 10-year-old to go and see this. Who can say that, you know? So that was that. And then in 1976, went to La Salle. But we were still part of the St. Agnes's. Sam Fitzsimons then joined. He was a fitter in Aldergrove, but had went and done his exams for youth work, and he wanted to do old pantos from across the water, so he brought them over and we did pantomimes and we put them on in Trench House.
Yes,
up there. And they were to the rafters.
Right.
And he also got me to do a James Young. We used to have this thing called Parents' Night, and we used to put it on in Holyside School.
Right.
And he said to me, what about doing this recital, this James Young recital called The Year 2001?
It was Sammy McNally with Donut. He was never done swinging the lead. And one bloody day as he swung it, he hit me a blow on the head. Yes.
But up says he trying to shift me.
But I didn't hear one word he said. Are you deaf, says he, trying to shift me.
But I wasn't deaf.
I was dead.
Well, of course, it went straight up to heaven. 3 million miles past the sun. I arrived at 7:15.
In the year of 2001.
It's funny saying that now in the year 2024.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
It is.
But it was all about, you know, Catholic and Protestants, you know, and, you know, you sure what?
I met a young lad in the hallway.
Say, I'm just in from Belfast. Is that so? Says he, I'm from Galway. So they've let an old prod in at last.
That's right.
Well, I said I was happy to meet him. I asked him, what does she do? Come with me, says he, and I'll show you. We've a special department for you. He led me. So I goes on and on. But it ends up, you find out, and the last words on it were, but if you find out that we love one another, you'll find out. There's no hell at all. So yeah. I did that, and that was, I suppose, there was it was Parents' Night, and it was put on in the Assembly Hall of the Holy Child School. And again, there must have been 1,000, you know, parents and big sisters and big brothers there. And there was me my friend had just started an apprentice painting thing with the housing executive, and he got these overalls, so I had to turn them up massively because he was about that size and I was about that size, and I put the overalls on and I carried on a wee ladder and a wee paint bucket and stood there in front of this massive crowd of 1,000 people.
Prophetic.
12 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose that was, apart from the wee singing thing in Bray, and that, I think those two things were the ground. And from there, whenever pantomime was mentioned, either in the youth club, or Trench House, then went up to La Salle School, did the pantos up there with Louis Doyle, and of course all the girls from St. Genevieve's come over. Mm. and we used to get chased down the street. I thought it was one of the Beatles, you know, and the, you know that scene, the girls are
in a hard day's night.
So I thought, well, this also has a an interest with the opposite sex. So, but so I thought, well, we'll keep that going, shall we? And then from there, on to St. Agnes Choral Society.
Yeah,
and we did South Pacific with the wonderful Candy Devine.
Yes,
and she played Bloody Mary. I remember in 1984, in the summer, I believe it was June, I was still only 19, and I remember saying, and you can believe this or believe it not, I remember standing backstage and looking up and sit first time in the opera house, and I said, I'd like to work here a lot.
And you have?
You know, I think 9 shows into this pantomime that I'm just about to do, 9 shows in, I will have clocked up 1,700 pantomimes.
Yeah, that's
amazing.
1,700. So I'm catching up, John. I don't ever think I'll catch him, but I'm galloping behind him. But there's an incredible thing too. I don't know, John, 2,500 or something like that. Yeah. Never missed a show.
No.
And, you know, with everything that he is, the knees, the scolio, the back, the spine.
Yeah.
I've seen him.
Yeah.
Like, almost in tears of pain on a Zimmer frame.
Yeah.
Side stage. And letting it go, walking on stage and doing his thing. Just...
And he does his thing. I mean, the punters love
him. Oh, that wouldn't be... I mean, I dread... The day that he hangs his
wig up.
Hangs his wig up and his whatever they call that stuff that blocks his teeth out.
I
dread that day. I really do.
But he's all set for next year and he's talking about it next Christmas, to be more correct.
Yeah.
And he's looking forward to it.
Oh, he is.
And I mean, when you're with him, he's the same as ever. I mean, he and I go back a long way.
Yeah.
Played under-18 football together.
Yep.
And, you know, then, of course, he was on the radio with me when I was at Downtown.
That's right, yeah.
And,
I don't say this lightly, but he's a remarkable human being.
Yeah.
He really is.
Yeah. And in terms of drawing in an audience, I was at an event last Friday and people were standing outside talking. And he was standing talking to me and people just gathered around.
Mm-hmm.
They just want
John,
like, open the fridge door, John will do 20 minutes, you know, no bother.
No bother, but he said to me there when he was up, when he called up to the house to pay a visit so that he could rip my daughter a new one, he was saying that he had to do a gig, and he says, was it bank people or something like that? But it was 60 blokes. There's no women there.
Mm-hmm.
And you know John, I mean, when he puts on the May stuff, all he wants to do is rip women, you know, new ones. But it was 60 men. But he says he went down a treat. And I just remember saying to him, you know, There's not too many people can do that, walk into your room, not knowing, you know, who the audience is going to be, and still have a blast and make it so personable. And, you know, he talks to people face to face.
I love that in the pandemic.
You know, I mean, as I say, 60 fellas, and he still managed to do, you know, half an hour. Yeah. And have all these men just...
Half an hour's nothing to John.
No.
You know?
But he still goes, oh, Jesus, what am I going to do here?
Yeah.
But still manages.
Yeah.
And there's not too many people can do that. Like,
but it's kind of like one small family to him. You know, and and that's really lovely.
Yeah.
So by having that in, it just makes him overall smile.
Yeah, yeah. And they just love getting, they love getting ripped apart.
Yeah.
You know, and they go out and they're in the interval or they see me somewhere else and they say, "Will you hear what he said to me?"
I know.
You know, and it's all the same, you know, you two sisters, you know what's coming next.
I know, yeah.
You know, Ron Panto and, you know, like, your dog Ruff, you know, but I only slag good looking women. You should be safe enough, you know. He's been saying the same thing, but they absolutely love it, you know.
You know.
Brilliant.
And
talking about pantomimes and a walk.
Yeah.
I know that we've won a BAFTA and an Oscar and a NIFTA.
Yeah.
But Thomas of Blue Lights.
Yes.
That's up. For one, the IFTA, am I right of saying?
Is it a UK National Television Award or something like that? I know they're up for the best script, best screenplay. I think Marty McCann's up for best actor. And I think Dormer's up for best supporting actor.
Oh, fantastic.
So I think I'm nearly sure that's the only... apologies if I haven't got that right, but it's in that bracket and I'm... they could be up for IFTAs as well, I'm not sure, James.
Well, I can never look at a tour bus in the same way again.
Yeah.
We couldn't believe that, James, could we?
Oh, no. Don't want you may know what comes out. No, but I've watched the first series with my mum and my dad. But you just make it funny, you know, and that's really lovely. You know?
Yeah, he's a complicated wee character, you know. On the one hand, his name's Alan Kelly, but he's a nickname. Hoppy, you know.
Yeah.
You know, he's got his troubles. He's got his demons, the character, you know, and, it was actually Dormer's character that explained to... Nathan's character Tommy about, you know, what happened, because they go back, you know, Hoppy and Jerry, they were sitting in the back of the car and Hoppy had asked his daddy and his wee brother to go in and get fish and chips.
Why not? Would somebody have to fight someone?
But that's where they were killed in the bomb.
Oh, right, okay.
So
yeah.
So Hoppy has taken on the responsibility of that, or lives, should I say, with the responsibility of that. And finds it hard to communicate and with people. He doesn't have a job, if he sees an opportunity to get a wee bit of, You know, I don't know what it is about him, but he thinks that's the only way that he can get to Jerry and get arrested, and you know, but he's up and down, the character. He really is. He's all over the shop.
There's great excitement about the new series.
Absolutely. I mean, first series was really, what can I say, it's us.
Yeah.
You know, it's you know, I used to really dislike, you know, when the likes of, I don't want to talk about the actor as such, but you know all that sort is on Coronation Street?
Aye.
We got sort of labelled, you know. So it did, so it is, you know, and it was just harmed.
Yeah.
You know, and then when you go back, you know, to other stuff, I always thought that I used to to watch the TV a wee bit like that there when the Northern Ireland sort of stuff came on. Whereas this is fantastic. I think it, you know, it is so us, it's so real. You know, characters are so fantastic in it, and I know there's a couple of English ones in there, Sian and Jerry's wife, and a few others that are, you know, but it just works for us. You know, you can look at it and go, that is us.
But although it's quintessentially Northern Ireland,
yeah,
it also travels.
Yeah.
And the fact that it's been shown around the world,
yeah,
is testament to that. I mean, you've been in this game a long time.
Yep.
How many TV dramas have commissioned two more seasons before the second one has even been shown?
Unprecedented.
It is.
It really is. And it gives, you know, Declan and Adam a great opportunity to go as far as they like. And they talk about, because they have three and four, can you imagine what you're going to be left with at the end of three, knowing that, you know, four is going to be there?
Yeah.
You know, you'd be... And them knowing that, they can go, you know, the world's their lobster. do you know what I mean?
I do, yes. But, I mean, that is, it's brilliant that you are part of that. I mean, I remember whenever we're just starting to make An Irish Goodbye, and you were the priest.
Yeah.
And I said to you, are you only doing clerics now? You know, with Pastor Begbie. But Pastor Begbie has been very good to you.
It has. It really, really has. And, you know, it's very unusual that you're playing, we talked about Jim and what have you in Coronation Street.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is quite unusual to play a character for so long.
Yeah.
You know, it's been, I think...
But also, it's quite unusual. Pastor Begbie is essentially not a nice person, but everybody loves him.
Yeah.
You know, that's the amazing trick.
Because he can get nothing right.
Yeah.
You know, he, let's face it, it's comedy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he's not a nice person, but there's no...
it's very funny.
There's no malice in it at all. I mean, I remember, was it 96, I think, the first time that I did anything for the Hold the Wall gang, I played a Channel 4 documentary maker. And Ali Ford, who plays Dimpna, was my camera woman. I think Nuala McKeever was Dimpna at that time. And Christine Blakely used to put her microphones on for us.
Yeah.
That's how long ago.
Yeah.
How long ago it was, long before
she became Christine Lampard. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Channel 4 documentary maker. And then they asked me to come in and play Commander Lenny, who had one line in the show, and what I had to do was go on and headbutt Uncle Andy and tell him not to hallucinate over my girlfriend ever again.
Yes.
I said, what am I going to do? Well, I've got one line here, I need to make an impression of some description. Like, so I give him a speech impediment, so then he changed from Commander Lenny to Pastor Leonard Begbie. Okay.
Yes.
So that's where that came about. And then, but you're doing the television show, but you're also doing the stage show.
Sometimes.
Yeah. So you get an awful long time to tweak and mess about with the character and give him wee, you know, idiosyncrasies to, you know, mess around with and, you know, as you say, over the years, there's no malice, it's comedy, but he can get away with murder.
Yeah.
You know, and usually does.
Yeah. So, I mean, things in the world of Paddy Jenkins at the minute are flying, notwithstanding the problem with the leg, but that will clear up, hopefully, very soon.
3 weeks.
You know, yeah.
3 weeks, and I walked in here without the crutches.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, now I couldn't walk on it without the boot, you know, but I've been looking after myself. There's a few things in the pipeline. Obviously, Blue Lights is going again, so it'll start being filming. Shoot the Boys get another series of Give Them a Headpiece. The Panto's there, you know.
Be mad not to give them another series.
It's flying at the minute. You know? It really is. It's flying. Perforated ulcers, but all I have to do is sit there with my leg up, and you know, that's only radio, so that's all good. But all good.
Happy,
very, very happy.
Happy is happy,
and I've got my wee grandchildren, you know, Anna and Leo, and they just, they make me very happy.
Yeah,
you know, they're my daughter brings them down to the house for me, and you know, I can sit and play with them, which is lovely. We've got a wee holiday coming up. The whole family, we're all heading over to Torremolinos in early May.
Right, I'll be
so
good.
Aye, so it's lovely. It'll be lovely just to have us all together.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't wait to find out where they take the character of Hoppy.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah.
Because you know, there, it's essentially a police show.
Yes.
You know, the McIntyres have been shoveled into jail, so there's new gangs.
Mm-hmm.
In series two, and our friend
Seamus. Oh yes, that's right.
He's at the helm. He's one of the drug lords, I believe.
Gracious me.
Yeah.
I thought he was a policeman in it. He's not.
I believe he's not.
No, well, you know more about it than me.
Well, here, let me say this.
Right.
I know what happens with my character. I'm not in it an awful lot,
right?
You know, because after what happened to Jerry, I'm not in a good place,
right?
So
yeah,
you know, because Jerry was my lifelong friend. So,
yes, and lifeline in many ways.
And lifeline, indeed. So, so Jerry got shot dead. I'm not in a good place, but as I say, I'm not in an awful lot, but I only read what I had to do.
Yes.
Because
you didn't want to spoil it for yourself.
I didn't, no. So I want to sit, you know, and go, where's this going? You know, so I never read it.
Yeah.
You know, I was kind of like that too when I did Marcella.
Yeah.
Where's this going to lead?
Yes, yeah.
And I was so nervous, you know, really.
Yeah, yeah.
But now, that moment, but just leave you until that really happens.
Yeah.
Until that next stage forward.
Yeah. No, the last thing I wanted to happen, you know, go on for. Yeah, but yeah. And then, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be.
Yeah.
You know.
You're going to enjoy it as much as the rest of us.
Yeah. And I watched it again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I watched the first series again.
I was actually thinking of doing that.
Do it.
Yeah.
You get more out of it the second time.
Right.
You really
right.
do. And I know it's hard to watch yourself sometimes, you know, but and I do a bit of I do a bit of that. Well,
I was going to say it's unusual for you to show so much relish about something you're in. You normally try and avoid watching yourself.
Yeah. And I still do, you know, to a certain extent, you know, I do a wee bit. You know, here I come again, see, whatever.
It was very hard for me to tell my family what was going on in my cellar.
Yeah.
Mum was like, how do you do that?
Yeah.
That's acting for you, Mum. You know, but Mum just couldn't understand what was the main problem.
Yeah.
Tell Patty what you didn't tell your mother before Marcella.
See, Mum had the last word of saying yes to Marcella to be filmed in Ulster University. And my colleague, Anna Friel, said to me, tell your mum, really thank you and give her a big high five for me. And I didn't tell my mum that I was getting the novice bit, the shot of me. And next minute I thought, no, I won't say anything.
Mm-hmm.
Keep it quiet until it's out on TV.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't allowed to say anything, because all that dilemma with the fan and the lawyer over in London.
Mm-hmm.
And was out on TV, actually, was it the day before your birthday, was it?
If you say so.
I think it was. And Mum couldn't watch it and stuff like that. Oh, Christ, my baby, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, Mum, it's a show, and stuff like that. And my Auntie Hazel was watching it too, and my Auntie Hazel would be my biggest fan.
Yeah.
She had to close her eyes at, you know, most part.
Yeah.
Well, you were getting murdered now, to be fair.
But it was actually really lovely to do, but don't be worried about things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Just take them as you can, and you might get a flashback.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's great.
Yeah. But I know what you're saying, that I usually do shy away from things, but you know, I played a very small, you know, part in Blue Lights, but it has to be applauded. I just think it, every character in it.
Yeah, you're right.
Mm-hmm. Is bang on. Not one would you go, don't know, you know, the Stevie Grace relationship, the three rookies, you know, and how they played that out, and were their characters, you know, arced, you know, from being rookies at the beginning of the series to where they ended up, you know. It's almost like, you know, they've came through this worldwide experience, you know, and then and where they're going to go. I mean, I just can't wait to watch it, to find out where it goes. And that's why I was never going to read it. I took the scripts out yesterday just to remind myself, you know, how many episodes are, because when you know as well as when you're filming, you don't know what end is up, you're going, what scene was that? Episode? You know,
I was so confused, you know, like those small 5 days.
Yeah.
Like when you're making a nice goodbye, was like, but that was like a lot later, and you know, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I was a bit confused.
Of course, and you know.
But you're the same as me.
Yeah, well, mine wasn't so bad as yours.
Oh, right, okay.
You know, you were probably doing the fireworks at the end and then having to go back and lie in the middle of the, you know, the farmyard and go, I'll get over it, or whatever the line was.
I was actually afraid of snow, never mind.
Yeah, but do you know what I mean?
I do.
You're doing the end first and the first at the end.
Yeah.
And it is a bit of a head scratch, you know.
Yeah.
You know, especially, you know, with you in an Irish goodbye, because you were, it's not so, because you were in it so much, but it's not so bad for me.
It's kind of like Good Vibrations, a wee bit, you know, like,
yeah.
Jolene O'Hara played a really good part in that.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't to do with any confusions or stuff like that, you just do it in your own time and do it in your own space.
That's it.
And I think that's really lovely, you know?
Yeah. But as I say, you know, you're much more to... much more of a head scratch than I had.
Yeah.
For I think I was only on Irish Goodbye for 2 days. What were you on it for, 2 weeks?
I was. No, five it was days. Actually for 5 days.
Is that all?
Yeah.
All right.
It was.
I thought it would have been more.
The amazing thing about an Irish Goodbye, in some ways, is whenever Suzanne and James went the Oscars, right, to Hollywood.
Yeah.
There were two main films in the running, five nominees for Best Short Film, but there were two films it was between.
Mm.
And one was a Disney movie with a budget of $1.4 million.
It was really high up, but see, on the day, Paddy Paul had the Disney movie upped a crazy amount of money, but it was down to like 45 or 39 on the day. But on movie, 50 to 1 to win.
But
can you believe that?
An Irish Goodbye, Paddy, 5 days to shoot it, then they edited it, and the budget for An Irish Goodbye wasn't $1.4 million. It wasn't 1 million. It wasn't point four of a million.
I was going to say it was
250 grand.
Yeah.
A quarter of a million.
Yeah.
But it was quality and it was good
that
was recognised. Brilliant for Ross and Tom.
Very good.
Brilliant for Seamus, yourself and James.
Yeah.
And
not forgetting Michelle.
No, and it gave all of us something to be proud of.
Absolutely.
People who were looking on, not just like us.
And plus, you know, it's all down to the actors. Because it's kind of like a funniest show anybody can watch.
Yep.
And that's how that we won these awards. You know, if it wasn't for Ross and Tom in COVID and lockdown, we didn't know what An Irish Goodbye was.
But it was amazing when one of the many crazy things that happened was Dame Judi Dench sent James a message and she said, you know, many people who have been are very well known and have done very well and successful acting careers never get within smelling distance of an Oscar. And here you are, you guys, both Oscar winners. What can I say? Podcast over on that happy note. Paddy Jenkins, thank you as ever.
Paddy, thanks again.
Great to spend time with you and happy days. See you next time.